Good morning, everyone. During Geshe Gelek's absence, we have a rotating cast of characters sitting up here in front of the room leading the discussions. They are very much going to be discussions. So I encourage everyone to participate, or we'll get out of here quite early if there's no participation. I'm Robbie Watkins. I've been a member of the Center for 20 years, and Sarah Brooks, our SPC, asked me to lead the discussions this morning. Let me get a sense of who's here. Do we have anyone who's here for the very first time this morning? Okay, welcome. And how many people were here 2 weeks ago when I started the discussion on the 16 guidelines? Okay, and who was here last Sunday morning when Venerable Lama talked about kindness? Okay, great. So, as always, we'll start off with some meditation. The word meditation means to become familiar with, in particular, becoming familiar with our mind and its potential for virtuous activities and its potential for happiness. That may not seem to be the mind that we have right now, but that is the ultimate nature of our mind. Certainly one quality that is lacking that would be useful to develop is concentration. So this will be a concentration meditation. As always, we start by checking our posture. We can begin from our legs and working up. If we're on a cushion, we sit a little bit towards the front of the cushion, not plop back in the middle, but on the front edge, so our pelvis is opened up, and our legs can be in any cross-legged form that we find comfortable and stable. If we're sitting in a chair, it's good to have our feet flat on the floor, and if we want to put a cushion underneath our feet, that's completely acceptable. Our back is straight, a little bit straighter than we normally sit. Our arms are slightly away from our torso, with our right hand on left, with thumbs touching. And really, if you have pants, you can kind of rest them in a fold in the pants, but really just put them plop down in your lap so you're not having to hold them up with any tension. Shoulders are down and slightly back, so our chest is a little bit open. We're not caved forward. Our head is straight on our shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other. Maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but certainly not chin down on chest. Mouth is lightly closed, not clenched. Tongue is against the upper gums, backside above our teeth. Eyes either just slightly open so that we just get light without shapes or colors really registering on our mind, or lightly closed. So check the posture now. If you notice sources of tension or discomfort, go ahead and work them out now. The point of the posture is not to torture yourself or be uncomfortable, but to have a stable, unchanging posture that doesn't distract from the meditation itself. And then after checking our posture, we always address our breath. We'll begin with a simple 9-round breathing. 3 breaths in and out through the right nostril. 3 breaths in and out through the left nostril. 3 breaths in and out through both nostrils, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and then pulling back towards our spine on the out-breath. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And next we set our motivation, our intention for doing the meditation that is to follow. And as much as possible, even if it seems effortful or unnatural, we try and generate the bodhicitta motivation, the motivation that everything we do, even something as simple as a 10-minute meditation, is done so that we can develop our mind and be of more benefit to others. And having set our motivation, we begin the actual meditation, simply placing our mind on the physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through the nostrils. Nothing more than that. Mind directly on the breath. Every time the mind wanders to a memory or a physical sensation, or a plan about something we need to do when we leave the center, we just gently set that aside and come back to the breath over and over again as many times as we need to. Over and over, back to the mind on the breath. And you may relax your concentration. Some of my notes here. Okay. In his absence, Geshe Gelug has asked us to discuss the 16 guidelines. The 16 guidelines are not an actual teaching of the historic Buddha. They were first written down by one of the Tibetan kings in approximately the 6th century A.D. and have been well known in Buddhist countries since that time. And they really summarize a lot of the teachings of the Buddha in a non-religious, fairly secular format. And approximately 5 or 6 years ago, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who's the spiritual director of the FPMT, the worldwide organization that we're part of, there's a picture of him on the right side of the altar with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Lama Zopa Rinpoche said that he thought it would be beneficial for Westerners in particular to study the 16 guidelines. There is a whole project within the FPMT called Essential Education that's devoted to promulgating the 16 guidelines. Denise Flora, who is not here this morning, from our center has been very involved in that project. And it's really the basis of what's being taught in our children's program here at Kadampa Center. There's a wonderful book that they've put out called 16 Guidelines for Life. Unfortunately, it's out of stock at the publishers, I've been told. People are looking for it in the bookstore and can't find it, but we should have it in within a couple of weeks, I'm told. But it's a very non-threatening introduction to the 16 guidelines, which incorporate a lot of the teachings of the Buddha in a way that is practical and relevant to how we lead our lives. So we started this discussion 2 weeks ago. So we'll do a little bit of review. Let's see. We're starting with the 16 guidelines. It's Tibetan Buddhism, so of course it's a numbered list. They love lists and they love numbers. 16 guidelines breaks down very nicely into four categories. Does anybody remember what the first category was that we talked about 2 weeks ago? How we think. Great. Today we'll be talking about the second category, which is how we act. Okay, we got some ringers in here. Great. Okay. Third category. Who can do that one for you? How we relate to others. Good. How we relate to others. And the last category is how we find meaning. Okay, great. Okay, so four, how we think, how we act, how we relate to others, how we find meaning. Does anybody remember what came under how we think last time? Amen. Patience is in there, humility. What else? Contentment. Delight, thank you, very good. Okay, so we talked about those 2 weeks ago. humility, patience, contentment, delight. How we act, we'll talk about those today, and I'm just going to list those. Kindness, which I think Venerable Lama talked about last week. Honesty. And we'll switch the order of the next two. We're going to talk about right speech. And then last will come generosity. How we act. How we relate to others. Respect. Forgiveness. Gratitude. And loyalty. And then the last category, how we find meaning, aspiration, principles, service, and courage. Okay. So we'll be talking about how we act today. These others will be discussed in the next few weeks during Geshe-la's absence. So this is really a very, this is Buddhist ethics. What's if you had to sum up Buddhist ethics in one phrase, what would you say? What's it about? Nonviolence, not harming others. That's the essence of ethical behavior in terms in Buddha, in the Buddhist philosophy, not harming others. You know, if we can help others, that's great. As Holiness the Dalai Lama says, as much as you can, help others. But if you can't do that, at least don't harm others. That's the basic principle of Buddhist ethics, which creates a cause for personal happiness. Okay? So this is a very general way of looking at Buddhist ethics. If we live our life according to this, we're pretty much going to be not harming others. Okay? We're going to, we'll talk about this a little bit more, we're going to be providing a sense of comfort or safety for others so that other people wish to be around us. I think this is where the exam, being a part of the FPMT, where I have incredible teachers like Geshe Gelug, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, as Holiness the Dalai Lama, when we actually see people who live according to these guidelines, we see the actual results. As I said in the first class, you know, we have that when Harry met Sally experience. I want what she's having. I want what he's having. You know, when we see these teachers who are living this, who seem to embody this, it's a very inspiring thing, and that's one of the great benefits that we have by being part of the FPMT, that we have access to people who really live their lives according to this. You know, there's, you look at this list, there's nothing really religious or mystical about it. It's just developing your own mind in ways that benefit others, that avoid harming them. So these are 16 guidelines. These are things to do. I like to contrast this with the 10 non-virtuous actions, or kind of put it up in parallel, because I think there's that's very useful. The 10 non-virtuous actions, this is a teaching of the Buddha. He said, these are actions to avoid if you don't want to suffer. Not because I'm a god and I'm telling you this, but just out of your own choice, if you don't want to suffer, these are things to avoid. He said that they're actions of body, speech, and mind, that if we do them based on his personal observations, will inevitably lead to suffering. No ifs, ands, or buts. So what are the non-virtuous actions of body? Anybody remember those? Killing, okay. That's always an easy one to remember. Killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. And who wants to define that for us? There are lots of different definitions. Generally means not having sex with someone else's partner or not having sex in a way that causes pain, either physical or emotional. You can get there. Lots of other definitions that get much more detailed than that, but we'll leave it at that, okay? Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. Speech. Lying. Okay, lying is always the first one. Divisive, yeah, or slander sometimes. Yep, this is a good group. You all know this. You all know your list, your 10 thises and your 16 thats. Harsh speech. And what's the last one? Idle gossip. Yeah, you all got them down. Okay. Divisive speech means speech that separates people. Harsh speech, obviously, clear lying. Idle gossip means excessive indulgence in meaningless chatter. Not that we can't relax and have a good time talking to our friends, but if it becomes the only way that we interact with others, it's definitely a non-virtuous action. And the ones of mind, anger, okay, ill will, the wish to harm others, okay, covetousness, yeah. Covetousness is always a tough one. Covetousness. Attachment, craving, grasping. And the last one is wrong view. And what's wrong view? I mean, it really means, yeah, it comes down to not seeing reality, not seeing things the way they are. It means not understanding the laws of karma, not seeing the ultimate nature of things. So, the Buddha is saying these are actions to avoid if you don't want to suffer. Not because I said so, but these are actions that lead to personal suffering. If you do these, you will suffer. That's the law of karma. Okay, that's immutable, unchanging. You may seem to get immediate benefit, but ultimately you will suffer. The ones of body are the easiest ones to avoid. Most of us start there. Ones of speech are more difficult to avoid. The ones of mind are extremely difficult to avoid. So they go from easiest to hardest to avoid. Then they go from, in each category, killing is the most serious. They decrease in seriousness going down. Lying is the most serious. They decrease in seriousness. Here they go up. And that wrong view is the most serious because wrong view is really kind of the root of all the others. So this is a nice way to think. These are things to avoid. On this side, these are things to do. You know, if you want to take all of the Buddhist philosophy, you know, all the thousands and thousands of sutras he gave, you could really put just about everything the Buddha taught in one of these two categories. Things not to do because they cause sufferings. Things to do because they cause happiness. Okay? Or we could say that we talked about this 2 weeks ago, they create merit, which is the potential to develop realizations on the spiritual path. Okay? So really very simple, not too much jargon by Buddhist standards, list of what not to do and what to do. Any questions or comments so far? This is very much meant to be an open discussion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wrong view. I'll turn that out to the group here. We have some. Patrick, you want to elaborate on wrong view for us?
No.
No? Okay. Because you don't think you can. That's a wrong view. One of the worst wrong views is to think that you don't have the potential to become enlightened. They think that you're very limited. Yeah. Anybody else want? Yeah. Believing something that's not true, okay. Yeah, Dorothy. You go get your exercise, yeah.
Right. Well, that's a good thing.
To believing in things that are not true, well,
Also, we don't know that they're not true until we've opened our mind to believe that we might be wrong.
Yeah.
And wrong view, that's why it's hard, because we think we're right. And in actuality, in many ways, we're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even realizing that our view of reality is very much projected onto things out. Yeah. Anyone else want to take a stab at wrong view? Okay. Does that help you at all? But it's basically not seeing reality, not seeing our projections, our imaginations, rather than the way things really are. Okay, so it's the most profound. It pervades everything else. It's kind of the modus operandi. Yeah.
What is the view of separatism?
Yes, come in.
Well, where does the view of separateness come in? That's a specific wrong view. That's one of the basic ones. The idea that we're independent of everything else in reality, when the correct view, according to the Buddha, is that we are interdependent, that everything is related. But this duality or separateness is a very specific wrong view that we need to deal with at some point if we want to be happy. Okay. So I'm going to erase all these others. And today we're going to speak in the remaining time, talk specifically about how we act. These are divided in body, speech, and mind. These are not divided that way so much, but you can see a lot of correlations in between them. Things not to do, things to do. Anybody want to take a stab? I think you talked about, I wasn't here last week, from Bolamo led a discussion on kindness. Anybody want to summarize that for us? What is kindness? Anybody want to take a stab at that? Showing compassion, okay. And what is compassion? How would you define compassion?
Gentleness.
Gentleness, okay.
Others.
Gentleness to ourselves and others, okay. We have a hand back here, yeah. Yeah. In the second row over to the right, end of the row. Can we try and record that, yeah.
To do things that benefit others without expectations of getting something in return.
Okay. Good, thank you. And then the very back row, there's a hand up.
The ability to do for others without the need for personal gain.
Without
need for personal gain.
Okay, doing for others without need for personal gain. All right. Okay. You brought up the word compassion. I was asking about that because specifically in Buddhism, that refers to the wish that others not suffer. So it's we use that in a very specific meaning, but I think, yeah, all those ideas, I think they all get to the same idea. It's doing things for others without any expectation that you'll get something in return. So that gets into the whole issue of what is our motivation. And I think we have to have some, as you said, some kindness or gentleness with ourselves, because our motivation as human beings stuck in samsara most of the time is going to be mixed at best. Sometimes we do things completely out of kindness, but there's often a lot of self-serving involved. So we have to accept that on our own part and not discredit what we do, the rejoicing in the first set of the 16 guidelines. I'm just going to read here what it says in the book. Kindness says, I want you to be happy. To be kind means to be friendly, caring, generous, benevolent, considerate, respectful, fair, and affectionate. Kindness knows with exquisite wisdom when it is appropriate to say or do something. It is found in the small details, a gentle touch on the cheek or a soft support of the elbow, guiding someone across the road. Okay. Yeah, that was. Did Lama say anything else about that last? Anything else important? Anybody remember? When? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, there were group discussions. I heard that. Okay. Okay. Moving on. Honesty. We've got three. Yeah. Since we talked about kindness last week, honesty. Anybody want to take a stab at what honesty is? I think we all have a sense of that. Being truthful, okay. Even when it's painful. Painful to others, painful to yourself. Okay. Honesty is not black and white. Would people agree with that or disagree with that? Agree. Okay. Somebody expound on that. Honesty is not. Yeah, Dorothy.
You might think you're being honest about something, but in actuality, if you say it or do it, it's not actually a very good thing that you're doing. So, what you think is honest might not be so honest.
Could you summarize what you just said? Yeah. I think that, yeah, there's a good point in there, but I didn't quite get it. Yeah.
You might think by telling somebody something that you're being honest and that it's a good thing because you're being honest about how you feel. But in actuality, it hurts them.
Yeah.
Because the way you're feeling and the way you're expressing it, in actuality, you might need to think about how you're feeling and how to deal with it instead of dumping your garbage on them and then they have to deal with it. So honesty is not black and white.
Yeah. So generally when you say, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you, you really need to stop and look at your motivation, right? Is that, yeah. Yeah, Ms. Green. Yeah. Right here in the middle, yeah.
Just on what Dorothy was saying, just the relationship between honesty and right speech. Like something can be honest, but if it's not useful or kind, then it's not necessarily something you want to say.
Okay, yeah, so we need to, yeah, we'll get to right speech, but it needs to be a combination of the two, theoretically. Okay. Anyone else? Yeah, we have a couple, second row and then the back row.
I think that sometimes it's a little bit easier to say what isn't honest than what is honest because, you know, our understanding is oftentimes very, very limited. So we don't have maybe the ability to say, but to make an absolute statement. But if you examine the reasons why you're making a statement or acting in a certain way, you might come to kind of a functional understanding of whether you're being honest or not.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hiding something?
Yeah.
Are you working from some motivation that you're either not admitting to yourself or to somebody else?
Yeah.
Are you trying to trick somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. But
Whereas,
you know, everybody's saying that honesty isn't black and white. Yeah, it's pretty doggone complicated. So sometimes you just need to examine yourself to figure out.
Yeah. Look at your motivation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, thank you. And then the back row.
I think that it's also a matter of perspective, basically like how you grow up Basically, it's like perspective of how you grew up can interpret whether or not what you see as being honest and truthful is your reality, but the people around you may have different interpretations of the event or whatever that's happening, and you're just basing your knowledge off of it. It may not be true to other people, so you also have to take that into account. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a tricky issue. Honesty, according to the book, is a personal choice that arises every time that human beings connect with one another. Each individual has the opportunity to be straightforward and honest in their dealings with other people, regardless of their health, family situation, possessions, or resources. In doing so, they help to create a culture of honesty for everyone. Imagine a world where everyone plays fair, acts justly, and keeps their financial affairs simple and straightforward. Even the thought can make us soften and smile. And that's really what these 16 guidelines are about individually living according to standards that create the type of world that we all really would want to live in. We can't make other people live by these guidelines, but at least we can begin to live by them ourselves. And they will lead to personal happiness, and they will help to create a world that's more like the world we want to live in. And that's really why Lama Zopa considers these so important, especially for the children's program. If we can introduce them to these principles and these ways of living at a young age, it's really going to pay off. I think that's what Rinpoche is saying with this. You want to say anything? You're just nodding your head. Anything about anyone here from the children's program? I'd particularly like to hear your perspective on this.
Useful in school?
Okay. They're being used in schools. Yeah, okay. Is it?
I can see her using the principles.
Talking about your daughter.
Yeah, when my daughter's dealing with other students, she's not going to label it like that, but I can see that she's applying them, and it's because she's used them for so long that they become natural. So that's what I think is more helpful, is that it's just kind of natural to know that she shouldn't do certain things, and she's not going to jump right in and do what everybody else is doing.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay. We have a hand in the back of the room. You're getting a workout. front, back.
So the word integrity, I don't know if that's equal, if that's the same thing as honesty, but I know everybody wants to be with people who live a life of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something similar there.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly much more enjoyable to be with people that we know have a commitment to integrity. You know, to be in a community of people that has a commitment to integrity. That's something worth, you know, working for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And over here. The talking stick is coming.
From what you described there, I think if you are kind to others, then your honesty wouldn't harm or hurt others.
Mm-hmm.
And your kindness would probably reflect in your speech as well.
Yeah.
So I think they are kind of interrelated.
Yeah, I think a couple other people have touched on that. That, you know, we don't practice honesty in isolation from the other 16 guidelines.
Right.
Yeah, they're all... You know, ideally, we're bringing all of them into our actions at any one time. Mm-hmm. So honesty, if it's coupled with kindness, it's not going to get into the type of situation that Dorothy was describing.
Okay. Honesty is honesty.
Yeah.
That is pretty vital.
What other factors we... Okay, yeah. Is it about yourself as well as for others? Do we need to be honest with ourselves?
Well, that's what I was thinking about. because if you're more, if you think about it more about yourself and how you react to others versus what I need to tell you about that shirt, you know, it's just not, that's not that important. And a lot of times when you, the word honesty comes up, people seem to refer to things about what I need to tell you about yourself. And so if you let go of that, like, I don't really need to tell you about you, but what I need to do is have an honest mind, then we don't need to really talk about whether I'm going to hurt you or not, because I'm not, I don't need to comment on everything about you.
Yeah.
I just need to keep this guy honest.
Yeah. Dorothy, and then Tony.
For me, the simple way for honesty is I now have a 16-year-old in my house, and I'm learning a lot of how to...
16-year-old.
So, to me now, I'm dealing with honesty, and because of she's come from a household that wasn't, and so now she's always, and it's hard for me to believe what she says. So, in many ways, it just has to do with, like, you ask, did you do the dishes? She says yes. In her mind, she's done them because she's done doing them. Even though there's still a pile in the sink. So, you know, to me, that's the simple side of honesty.
Yeah. Okay. And Tony?
I was reading a quote from someone, and of course I don't remember who it is now, but the quote was essentially, a truth told with bad intention beats all the lies of the world, which I think gets to that point that we're kind of talking about a little bit here, is the subjective aspect and all the aspect, and also the aspect of intention itself. Yeah, I have kids, and one of the things I try to tell them is, and because we hear a lot about in our culture about getting things off your chest and tell the truth, but often that comes out in a oftentimes not so nice way, but because it comes out of anger. But I try to tell them in any given situation we have, there's different truths we can tell. And we have to find the one that's most appropriate and most kind and most beneficial to the people that we're interacting with. So.
Okay. Just to keep us on our time schedule, right speech I'm just going to touch on briefly because I think we've really addressed that a lot in talking about honesty. Right speech is a commitment to use words skillfully in a way that will bring peace and happiness to ourselves and the people around us. It is about using our speech to take away fear, to bring hope, to make people laugh and feel close to one another. This is how we share who we are. So right speech, I think, is a necessary corollary of honesty. We have to couple honesty with right speech, using words skillfully in a way that will bring peace and happiness. So that's a little bit about right speech. Generosity, I think we all have an idea what generosity is. Let me turn back and see what they say here. It's the textbook definition as the wish to benefit someone else, the wish to benefit others, okay, is generosity. And the classical teachings of the Buddha, he told us that there are three types of generosity. Does anybody know what the first, does anybody know what those are? What's the first type of generosity?
Material.
Yes, thank you, Elise. Material gifts, food, shelter, clothing, money. Material gifts, that's the first way we can be generous. What's the next way we can be generous? Yeah, great. We can give the Dharma, the teachings. So, teachings that we have found of value, we can share those with others. That's an act of generosity. It's not proselytizing or trying to convert anyone, but if we think something has really been of value to ourselves, we share it with others. And that's what Kadampa Center is about. That's why Geshe Gelug's sitting there. He's not on an ego trip. He's practicing generosity every time he teaches by sitting up here and sharing what has made him the incredible person that he is. And what's the third? Yeah. No, I'm here because Sarah told me I had to. Yeah. anybody know what the third type of generosity is?
Safety.
Giving, yeah, that, and these are considered an order of greatness. The greatest gift the way we can be most generous to others is to give them a sense of safety in our presence, a sense of fearlessness, that they feel safe when they're with us. And we do that by avoiding the 10 non-virtuous actions and practicing the 16 guidelines. That's the way to be generous, to give others this sense of safety. So, it just happened, or this was not planned, I can promise you, but I brought up the subject of generosity, and I'm just going to turn the floor over to Sandy Carlson, who's going to be talking about our annual campaign, which I didn't even know until I walked into the center today, but it worked out.
Yeah, that's our wonderful
well.
Karma here
yeah.
at the center. Good morning, everybody. My name is Sandy Carlson, and most of you know me through my membership hat. But today I come to you as a part of the FDC, which is the financial development company here at the center. And today is the launch of our annual appeal. We're doing a little bit of a different format this year, and we'll explain a little bit more why. But the first thing I want to do is to bring up what we have chosen as every year we try to kind of do a face of the appeal to help to make it a little bit more something that y'all can get behind a little bit more. And the annual appeal and all of the things that we're going to talk about today are kind of about money and finances and some of the generosity things that we've talked about. But the biggest part of the annual appeal and the biggest part of what we're doing today is kind of bringing the heart of what we are doing. And I think a beautiful representation of that is going to be one of our member families that have agreed to help us with this year's appeal, and this is Tony and Colleen.
So they asked us to write a letter that explained a little bit about our involvement with Kadampa Center and about our family and the impact that the center and the community as a whole has had on our family. So we're going to read that. Would you like to read? Okay. All right. Dear Kadampa Center friends, what we have learned at Kadampa Center pervades every aspect of our lives in so many ways that to express our gratitude in words seems almost impossible. We're a married couple now, but we came to Kadampa Center separately as individuals who did not know one another and met in a Discovering Buddhism class. This essential part of our lives, our marriage, became possible because other people were kind enough first to establish the Kadampa Center and then to offer a variety of classes that could teach us about the mind, ourselves, and reality. Someone was kind enough to ensure that childcare was provided so that single parents such as ourselves could come and learn about Buddhism. What we found at Kadampa Center is a community built on a foundation of love, compassion, and a determination to benefit others. One of the particular strengths of this community is that it is both connected by lineage to the traditions and teachings of Buddhism, and also skillful in allowing these traditions and teachings to thrive and grow in the West by meeting the needs of people with modern Western lives. Certainly that is us. Between the two of us, we have three children. Meadow is 11, Sebastian is 6, and our baby Tenzin is coming up on 16 months. Our house is small, often loud with the sounds of playing children, and sometimes loud with the frustrated voices of grumpy parents. But we practice love. We want each other to be happy. We practice compassion. We want each other to be free from suffering. We practice forgiveness, and we teach our children that their mistakes do not define them, and that anger is the pain that hurts us all. We had an intuitive understanding of some of these concepts prior to coming to Kadampa Center, but here we found them clearly articulated in the teachings of the Buddha. Through listening to teachings, discussing and debating, and seeing the examples set by our teachers and longtime practitioners, we have gained the tools to better integrate love, compassion, and patience into our daily lives. For us, Kadampa Center is so much more than a building, a place for meditation, or even a Dharma center. It is our community, where we're on the same path as those around us, trying through perseverance, dedication, and working on our minds to make the world a better place. We understand that our little kind words, moments of patience, and attempts at peace in our own home contribute to our own children's future in that better world, and we treasure having others to share that journey. We want our community to continue to thrive, so we are very happy to contribute monetarily to Kadampa Center with the wish that all sentient beings benefit from our offering. And we are so happy that our children are able to contribute to the tapestry of kindness that is our Kadampa Center community with their small hands, voices, and love. With hands folded in gratitude, Colleen Mitchell and Tony Allen.
Thank you. don't think that that could have been better said. And that is totally from the heart, and that I think really exemplifies, you know, many of the reasons that we all give to Canopus Center. Jim Green, who's part of our Financial Development Committee, is going to now explain a little bit about how you two can help and a little bit about how we're trying to change our model a little bit this year.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I want to say thank you to Tony and Colleen. Really, you folks and people like you are the heart of our center. And, you know, we're a volunteer center, so I want to thank you all for what you do. So many people put so many hours of incredible work into making this place operate. It's just wonderful. That form of generosity is fantastic, so thank you for that. And we're a growing center, so I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a lot more people coming on a regular basis to Canopus Center. And this is the second time we've made this presentation. There's a whole first group of people who come in the mornings now, and that's a direct result of the fact that we're growing. I mean, we need two separate teachings to accommodate all the people and families that are coming here. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. Couldn't ask for more. I mean, more people getting taught these incredible guidelines. It's just wonderful benefit for all sentient beings. Along with that comes some of the reason that we're here to talk to you today is that our annual appeal needs to be able to support this kind of growth. Even though we are volunteer run and operated largely, we do have operations and staff that need to happen. As we look to the future, so we look to the past at the incredible growth that's happened, and as we look to the future, if we just have the same track record of growth, I mean, we're going to outgrow this center very soon. We're going to need all sorts of stuff. Our children's classes are brimming full, so we've decided to change our model a little bit. We have a huge potential for even more growth. I don't know if you know this or not, how many people knew that Raleigh or that RTP area was the 10th largest metropolitan area for Buddhists? Yeah, I mean, pretty in the country. Pretty incredible. We have a lot of people out there who self-identify as Buddhists on the census. Also, we're one of the largest FPMT centers, and we're certainly the largest FPMT center that provides teachings free of charge. We want to continue that tradition. It's our form of generosity. It's also our way of helping everyone here feel safe and secure when they come in. But as we look at that, we have to create a more sustainable model of donation. And so we're asking everybody to consider being sustainers. How many of you heard of that on NPR? Or just a few. It's a great model, and we're asking people to do that, to consider, instead of writing a one-time check once a year to the Canopus Center, to think about becoming a sustainer, signing up online at canopuscenter.org/donate. We're sending out letters to everybody as well with instructions on how to do this and a form that you can fill out. There's forms out in the front as well. But when you're doing this, please consider this. Remember what your last gift was. If you can give a little bit more this year, please do. But also consider making your general Donna donation as part of that. Like if you know you're going to come in and you're going to give $5 per, you know, teaching that you come to, please consider adding that into your sustainer pledge. And here's why. It's because we've seen a general dip in Donna donations, and we do rely on those quite a bit. And I think, personally, myself, I leave my cash at home. I rarely carry cash anymore, and so it's easier for me to just, when I'm thinking about my annual pledge, my monthly, how much I want to do, to just include that into it so that I don't have to worry about bringing cash to the meetings. We've got an incredible potential and future ahead of us. I mean, we've got incredible things. We'll still come to you. If you want to be like directly connected to certain powerful things that happen here, we're still going to come out and say, hey, here's an opportunity. There's a visiting teacher. If you want to get involved directly with that, please do. If you need a puja or you want to participate in a puja, you can still do that as well. But we're just asking you to consider making a sustaining pledge moving forward. We already have about 50% of our folks who do that. We'd just love to see it get up past that. Does anybody have any questions for me? Yes, Susan.
What's the board's
Well,
I know that.
Just to help put this, no answers required. Just to help put this in context, so I can go home for the next week and not speak out of portion.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Thank you, Susan. Yeah, okay. And so so if you've given before, please consider doing this. If you haven't ever given, we want you to be a part of this. We want you to feel like you're able to give. So, you know, whatever you can give. If it's $5 a month, it's $5 a month. That's wonderful. We accept everything and all things. So please do join us in this. If you've never given to the annual appeal, please do consider doing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Feel free to ask any of us on the FTC, myself, Jim, Donna, Susan. There's a few people, if you've got questions to ask about what being a sustainer means and what that means, what that technically means is we're going to ask you to put this either on your credit card or a bank draft so that you don't have to worry about it anymore, and we can count on that money coming in. You still have control, so you can stop it at any time, okay? But this allows all of our volunteer efforts to stop worrying about how are we going to pay the bills this month and take care of everything and start looking to the future to grow our children's program, to grow our teaching sessions, to grow for all of these things. And like Susan said, what is that worth? You know, for some of us, it's one less latte a month. You know, I could probably cut out about 10 of those and just switch over to regular coffee. And y'all know me well enough to know that I'm a total coffee addict. But one of the other questions that we're going to get, so I'll answer this now, what is our operational budget? Since this is the first year that we're going to change to this sustainer model, our operational budget, what we used to do with the annual appeal, would only cover about 60 to 70% of our operational budget. So those of you that have seen this before and saw the thermometer in the years past, we were always going for around 100, you know, 120,000, 140,000 right in there. Our operational budget is probably closer to $200,000. And that's for a very small portion of paid staff. And again, if I actually worked at it, I think they pay to work here. It's for the building. It's for the lights. It's for the books, for the children's program. It's for many, many different things. But we truly are mostly a volunteer source. So everything that we do goes to help each other. And this is, we are standing on the shoulders of those that came before us. Don Brown, back there, 22 years ago, started this whole thing in his living room. Robbie Watkins is the center director, has been a part of this whole time. Susan Potter, Patrick, I can see all you guys. Everything that you guys have done, all of these years have brought us to this point. And so it's part of us is trying to pay it forward and let's keep this going. We're just growing at a phenomenal rate, but we don't want to lose that sense of heart and that sense of community that has really been the core basis of the center and these teachings by Geshe-la. So if we can just take care of the nitty-gritty paper stuff so we can focus on what we're all about. You know, that's really what we're trying to do, and I can't thank you enough for everything that everybody here does. So from my heart to yours, thank you so much for everything that you have done and that you're going to do. Okay, thank you, Robbie.
May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and redemptive drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you're the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chen Reizig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, we beseech, may all your holy prayers be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at an early young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Then we're going to do seven Tara mantras. Om tare tu re so ha. 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 Om tare tu re so ha.